Hi, this podcast is going to be about a very important subject that I think you're going to enjoy very much. It's about emotional eating, and we're going to be sharing a lot of information with you from one of our favorite experts. It's from Baron. Hi, and welcome to the One Life Wellbeing Podcast, where your well-being always comes first. We're your hosts, Greg, Baron, and Chris, and we're here to help you really make the most of your life. We're going to do this by sharing all the best ways to put well-being right at the heart of every day. So join us every week to feel better, to look great, and to start to really enjoy life, because that's what wellness really means. Okay, if you're ready, let's get started. Hi, Baron. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thanks. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's really good to have you. Now, we get a lot of emails and a lot of interest from this subject, and we thought it'd be a really good opportunity to discuss it in a little bit more depth. And we're talking about emotional eating. Now, this is something that I know you know an awful lot about. So maybe we should start by trying to get a definition here. What is emotional eating?
Yes, emotional eating is one of my favorite subjects. I really enjoy many aspects of the research involved in emotional eating. And what it's about is choosing and selecting to eat certain foods which are not for the biological reason of being hungry, but for other psychological reasons.
Hey, just a second. I like to eat things that taste good. So I'm not eating just because it's necessarily good for me, it's because it tastes good. Is that the same thing?
No, that's not the same thing. It's quite normal, and we all love to eat. So eating delicious food is absolutely the right thing to do.
Thank goodness for that. I was getting worried right at the start. So tell me, you're saying emotional eating is because you're choosing food for psychological reasons. What does that mean?
That means that we see food as a comfort rather than something than fuel, for example. So
right.
What happens is that we're taught at quite a young age that food is there for comfort and sustenance. And as we project that idea of food for comfort into our adulthood, we start to have that habit of using food for comfort.
Food for comfort. Does that mean you only eat comfort food when you're stressed?
You could be stressed. You might even have other emotions that are involved, and you'll still want to eat the food.
Okay. I mean, from my limited understanding about emotional eating, it's something that we turn to, I guess, when we're unhappy. Am I on the right track?
You are on the right track. Being unhappy is definitely one of the big reasons that we tend to want to grab a whole lot of food that we don't really need.
Okay.
But it could be frustration. It could be irritation, anger, it might even be happiness, and the idea of celebration means that you need to overeat.
Okay, let's kind of get some details here. What sort of things do people reach for typically when they're having a bout of emotional eating?
Well, the two items that are very much on this menu tend to be, of course, our old friend sugar.
Oh, yes.
And then fat as well.
Okay.
And it's unfortunately not always the good fat.
Right.
It's the hydrogenated fat, which is, we are educating our taste buds sometimes to eat these foods and select these foods because of various chemicals that are in the food.
Are you saying they're addictive?
I am.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I know why I like these things. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, you like to call sugar, what is it, sweet, white, and deadly?
That's the name.
Yeah, okay. What is it about sugar that gives people emotional comfort when they eat it?
I think it's the sweetness, the sweetness that makes people feel sweeter. That could be a good description. But it's also, there is a buzz of energy, because as the sugar enters our bloodstream, we do get that buzz of energy from the sugar. But also there's a remembering childhood experience, I think, that people have, where they received sweets as a reward or as a comfort, or at any moment that they were unhappy, they would receive sweets.
Do you think that's when the habits really begin? Does it go all the way back to childhood?
It does go back to childhood. And then through teenage years and onto adulthood, the habits stay and sometimes get worse because we have more access to these foods.
Okay. Well, I'm curious because I know a lot of people will understand that, you know, when they're unhappy, they'll reach for food that just happened to make them feel better. But from what I have read, it's not a kind of a comfort that lasts. It tends to be short-lived. Is that right?
Yes, it is. What happens is that when we start to overfill our stomachs, mm-hmm. it becomes physically uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have this awful reminder of the fact that you have, in fact, overeaten. And the reason why you've overeaten hasn't been to do with hunger. And that has an impact, a psychological impact on your emotions. Mm-hmm. And so emotionally, you become very unhappy with yourself.
Is that because you've just done the wrong thing, so you get an unhealthy slice of guilt.
Exactly. And you become angry with yourself. And sometimes what happens is that you want to punish yourself. And then another way of punishing yourself, unfortunately, is to eat more of the worst food.
So you've got a vicious cycle.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah, a downward spiral of overeating to the point of feeling really ill.
So we've got two substances, our old friend sugar and the unhealthy fat. And these tend to be the things that people gravitate towards when they're heading on a pathway to emotional eating.
Yes, those are the foods. It's very much those foods, and perhaps foods from childhood as well, that when you were a child, you really enjoyed eating, and mm-hmm. that gave you comfort as a child. And so you project that comfort into your adult life by eating the same food.
And it doesn't even sound like something that you're even conscious of. It sounds like something you do as almost a knee-jerk reaction. Does that happen? Does it happen like
it
that?
It does happen. I think some people don't even realize that they're doing it until it's actually done. Others will make the conscious decision that they think they deserve it for some kind of reason that doesn't even have any logic to it, but has some kind of emotional justification, if you for having to eat the food.
Well, so tell me, some of these substances that we take for comfort have been described as addictive. Is there any truth in that?
I think there is. Because of this feeling of comfort or the buzz that you get from sugar, that sudden burst of energy, the feeling stays with us in our emotional psyche. And what happens is that we remember that there was this feeling when eating the particular food. Mm-hmm. So then we almost become addicted to the feeling that the food gives us. The unfortunate thing is that the feeling doesn't last.
Yeah,
in fact,
with
the sugar, what it'll tend to do is send your blood sugar right down again as insulin is produced.
Sure.
And then it has a negative and opposite reaction, and you become tired and exhausted.
Well, we've got a real problem here, because when people are unhappy and they make the situation worse by eating the sort of things that are going to make them feel even, I don't know, less satisfied with life, there must be an alternative to the foods you've just described. If you were advising somebody who's suffering from this kind of condition, what alternatives would you recommend?
There are many alternatives, thankfully.
I'm glad about that.
You could do something a lot more satisfying and productive. You could go for a walk. You could listen to a meditation.
Yeah, but is that really going to work when you've got the craving for those emotional foods?
What you might just need is to rehydrate. So I would suggest initially having a lovely cup of tea or glass of water and see how you feel after that.
You mean you can tackle cravings just by rehydrating?
Absolutely, because sometimes cravings are related to the fact that you simply don't have enough H2O in your body.
Wow. Okay. Well, I hope people are picking up on this, because some of us feel that emotional eating is like a permanent condition. There's nothing you can do about it. But obviously, from your experience, there are lots of things we can do about it. That's top of my list. You can rehydrate. What comes next?
Take a wonderful bath. If you have some aromatherapy oils, I would suggest putting them into your bath, running the bath, and just relaxing for a moment and remembering how wonderful you truly are.
Okay. So does that really mean that you're learning to relax more, to defuse the stress, remove the cause of that emotional upset? Is that the idea?
That is the idea.
Okay.
Because the stress is there, as we spoke before once, the limbic system Mm-mm. is very much responsible for decisions in a stressful state. So the more you can relax your mind, the more you'll find that suddenly that need to eat might just go away or lessen.
You've been talking to people about developing more awareness of how they feel, of just catching themselves right at the moment when they're going to, you know, reach out for the food, well, let's call it the emotionally charged food, to be polite, just as they're reaching out for the candy, for the cookie, whatever it is, that's the moment you've really got to catch yourself and develop more awareness. How would you do that? How would you advise somebody to do that?
I would say ask yourself some questions. Have some questions ready. Questions like, do I really want to eat this right now? Or what is making me want to eat this right now? Do I really need to have this? How am I going to feel after I've eaten this?
That's a good one.
Is it really to have the stomach ache, the feelings, the negative feelings of revulsion, the feeling of failure? Is it really worth it just to have 1 second of delight in my mouth?
This is good. You know, the latest ideas from cognitive behavioral therapy say that the what if strategy can be very, very effective. Because it helps to tone down the response from the limbic system, those very, very strong impulse drives. And apparently it switches on the prefrontal cortex, you know, the part that plans, the logical mind. And the more you can appeal to the prefrontal cortex, the more the limbic system cools down. So if I hear you right, we've got a what-if strategy working out, I mean, how would I feel if I eat this garbage? And that can help people to reframe their emotional problems. This is good. And I hope people who are listening in are thinking, yeah, you know, there's something we can do about this. If you have been experiencing emotional eating, you're not condemned to be like this. Baron, you've had a lot of experience in advising people how to handle these problems. Tell us about the most extreme case that you've ever had to deal with.
There have been several extreme cases.
She's looking at me. I'm not one of those cases. You mean someone else, I hope?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think we quite realize how prevalent this is in our society. Okay. And it's often hidden. And binge eating syndrome, which is actually one of the eating disorders that is least known about and least discussed, is very much there and is happening right now, right under our noses.
Is that driven by emotional issues? Is that a form of emotional eating?
Yes, it's very driven by emotional issues. And what can happen is that a binge can actually last for hours or the entire day.
No, really?
So it starts off in the morning with just a piece of chocolate.
Yeah.
And then it goes to a bag of crisps. And then it's the cake left over from somebody's birthday party. And then the whole cake goes. And then that starts the craving, and it's also a craving for carbohydrates, which actually turn to sugar once they're processed through our system. And then the person would even go to the level of opening up a whole bag of muesli and eating the lot, all of it.
Wow, in one set, in one sitting.
In one sitting.
And this is from your experience. This is real people examples.
This is real people, and it doesn't even end there. They'll then go out to the shops and buy more food. And if you look at the shopping trolley, it looks like they're shopping for six people for a birthday party. And they'll bring that home and they will eat it all.
Wow. Wow. Even though they're going to feel pretty unwell having stuffed their body with all this nasty stuff.
Because I think the limbic system takes over here. So there is the consciousness is only about what do I need right now to feel a bit better, and any kind of consequence is disregarded.
So one of the pieces of advice I know that you give people is to prepare themselves by being more strict with the shopping. Is that right?
It is better not to have these junk foods in the house. Because
then you don't have the temptation around
you.
Yes,
because then it's so easy just to reach for them. If they're not there, that moment that you pause and think, is it really worth going to the shops to buy it, is probably just enough for you to think, well, do I really need it? And what are the consequences going to be? And it will many times stop you from going ahead with the binge.
Okay, if you've got a habit of emotional eating, what's the best catalyst to change your mind about this habit, get you back on the right track?
You spoke about cognitive behavioral therapy and asking these questions and looking at the situation from the point of view of how you feel about yourself and your body and your life, and whether you feel that you want to reward your body and protect your body in a way that's good for it.
Okay.
and for you, and how that will make you feel.
But is that the kind of thing you could do on your own, or would you think people probably need therapy?
Some people would need some therapeutic help. Okay. And I must mention here emotional freedom technique, which is a wonderful therapy using a tapping technique and acupuncture points, which can be incredibly helpful.
Tell me more about that, because that might be a completely unknown quantity to people listening to this.
It's developed really as a way to think more about why you might have negative feelings.
Okay.
And as you think and talk through the process and tap on certain emotional activation,
how do you mean
acupuncture
tap?
Points.
What's
so
that?
You take two fingers and you tap on various parts of the body, the hands and the head and the face, the chest and the rib cage. And it's a technique that has been developed and has been proved to be immensely successful. But that's not the only way.
Yeah.
There are books that talk about the subject that are very, very effective. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are therapists that specialize in this area that can help you as well.
Well, I just wondered, because sometimes I think people feel trapped by their habits. And if you have some outside help, some objective advice, someone who perhaps can just guide you beautifully, calmly, into alternatives, so you don't feel that you're totally trapped by your own behavior. I'm a big fan of people getting help when they need it, and I know you've helped a lot of people. Let's just move on a little bit, because emotional eating can take different forms. Do you find that people do it in secret? You got secret emotional eaters? Family doesn't even know they do it?
A lot of the binging does happen in secret, so yeah. People hide this aspect of themselves yeah. from their family or their friends,
mm-hmm.
and because they're ashamed, and they
Got
would
it.
Rather
yeah, yeah.
not have to admit to anybody yeah. else in the whole world that they're going through this painful process.
So how do you deal with somebody who's not even admitting that they've got a problem, you know, to family and friends?
Quite often there's some kind of crisis. They might see a photo of themselves, or somebody might comment on the fact that they don't look very well.
Yeah.
They might be putting on weight in it uncontrollably.
Mm.
Or their doctor, their family doctor, might have said something to them at a general checkup. Or even their own children. I've had several patients that I've worked with where their children have said, "Mom, you're getting so fat, and you can't play ball with me anymore."
They're so subtle, aren't they? Bless them. Just getting a message across. And you find from your experience that can be the trigger point that gets people to think, you know, I maybe have to deal with this. Where would you recommend people go as a first step if they're looking for help?
There are all kinds of resources available. On the internet, there is a lot available, but you need to be careful and work rather with somebody that you trust
mm-hmm.
that would have an idea of what is the best thing mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. Contact a specialist in the field of weight loss behavior. It could be an emotional freedom specialist in the technique I was speaking about. It might be a weight loss specialist. Have a good look around the internet, and if anybody's unsure and would like some recommendations, just come along to our website and talk to us about what the situation might be, and I'm sure that we could find a suitable solution, a therapeutic solution for you.
Yeah, it's important, because I think this is a lot more than just dealing with somebody's weight. It's dealing with all of those emotional issues and helping people really to come to terms with whatever's caused those problems in the past, to help them to discover what wellness is all about. Well, we've covered that, and I've got a feeling that from some of the responses we've had, we might just be coming back to this subject again. Baron, I really want to thank you for sharing your experience of a very important subject. I hope we've given hope to people to know that emotional eating is not something you have to live with. There are choices, there are alternatives, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed doing it. Baron, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have enjoyed it. And I really do hope that people feel that there are solutions.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for listening. We're going to be back with you soon with another subject that I hope you'll find enjoyable. Until then, it's goodbye from Greg.
And goodbye from me, Baron.